You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .06 on the West Coast. Mike McNamara with you. I'm joined by a colleague, a former colleague of mine, John Ubaldi, Master Gunnery Sergeant, United States Marine Corps, retired. So, Master Guns, first of all, thanks for joining us here on All Marine Radio. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. It was a pleasure serving with you back in the day.
That was a nightmare. Are you kidding me? We were we served at Meth Headquarters Group, which was an understaffed organization, and we deployed and redeployed people from Iraq and Afghanistan, and we supported every crazy MIT and other training team that got stood up, and talk about herding cats, and imagine doing that when you're short staff. Virtually every guy that Master Guns was in charge of was a TBI, PTSD guy that was in and out of therapy during the week and physical treatment and all the rest of the stuff. So it was not without its challenges.
It was, I agree. It was a challenge at that point.
Yeah. No, and every guy, I remember, if you can imagine, like the MEF headquarters group command element, so the command element group, for the MEF, they come to weigh in, right? Now, we have all these TBI, PTSD guys that are just this side of cuckoo, right? And they're all medicated, right? And they're great guys. They're just, the reason they were with us was they couldn't deploy, and some were trying to get into Wounded War Battalion for their injuries and going through that process and whatnot. I mean, they were damaged guys. And so these guys, so now they're weighing these people. It's like, okay, you're not 59 and 3/4 inches, you're 59. Well, that means you're overweight, right? And so they'd start arguing, and you'd hear it out in the hallway. And so I'd walk out there on occasion and say, hey, just so everybody knows, every one of these guys is a PTSD TBI guy. They're all medicated, and they're hanging on by a thread, I'm telling you. So,
well, they were. I remember I had a whiteboard with a listing of everybody's medical appointment. It was a challenge. Right. And we're still trying to do product and do briefs, and I'm like, yeah. What did I get myself into?
What is this? So I walk out in the hallway, and I say that to everybody, and they kind of look at me, and I said, so don't argue with him, okay? Don't push him. And like, all these Marines in the hallway, they just look at me. And then our guys, they start laughing. And I said, hey, I'm not joking either. It's true. And then they kind of nod their head like, yeah, it is. We're like hanging by our threads, so don't mess with us. And then everything would get really quick. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, you retired in 2014?
2014, March of 2014. And then I moved out to Tampa about a year later.
No,
I'm sorry. I moved out here in 2013, and then a few months later, I retired. So
okay.
I live out in Tampa.
All right. Now, were you born and raised in Sacramento? What's your connection to Sacramento? We both have connections. I was born and raised there. Are you from there?
No, I was born and raised in Marin County, which is a county north of San Francisco, and I went to Sacramento State to go to college, and then once I graduated, I just kind of stuck around.
Okay. All right.
Because I always loved politics, and I figured that was it, and then did that for a number of years, and then 9/11 rolls around, and I got activated 3 times, twice to go to Afghanistan and once to Iraq.
Okay, so you hang around Sacramento, and now to Tampa. What is there anything that drew you specifically to Tampa? Was it work? And before you answer that, tell everybody what the Ubaldi Reports is.
Ubaldi Reports is a media publishing company. And what I do is I write on national and international topics. What I'm trying to do is turn it into an online news site, which is staffed by veterans who have expertise and their dependents on national and international topics. And the one thing that's going to be different than most news sites is if you write you can't have any connection to or donate to any political party or candidate. Because I think once you do, you already taint yourself to that party and you lose your objectivity. So it's just basically fact-based news, not opinion-based news.
Okay, so here's the next question. So you've been listening to All Marine Radio, you lifted my idea, and now I busted you. What's up with that? What is up with that?
It's one of those things.
So now you got, hey, now you got your pants pulled down in public. Time to have to come to
all the trauma you put, all the trauma you put me through when I was down at the Memphis kind of payback.
The no, but so we arrive at the same conclusion from very different perspective, from very different physically located places, and that is this: the nation desperately needs a place to go for accurate reporting, and reporting in the specific sense of what reporting is supposed to be in journalism. And so, let me articulate. So what in my vision is something like the Drudge Report, but you have veterans, who have an interest in journalism and no other ties. And what this website does, it connects you with what I would call credible news sources, people that we know, people that we vetted, people that we know are solid reporters. And so when you come to this website, you can believe that this is a vetted source for reporting and sticks to the reporting lane, and it doesn't morph into reporting commentary and opinion. So that's my conception. How did you arrive to it, though?
How I arrived to it, I got my master's through American Military University and was on national security. My focus was the Middle East. Well, every time, and I've always loved politics, but when you go to, you had to go to multiple different sources. And it really solidified itself was this past election. It doesn't matter where you stand on the political spectrum. Look where the media has gone, and because of WikiLeaks, exposed a lot of the journalists, and there's something I'm sure you're familiar with, the Society of Professional Journalism. They have an ethics code, and this is how a journalist is supposed to do things. You're supposed to report all the truth. You're not supposed to put your opinion in. You're not supposed to take your article and send it to one political party to proper vetting. You're supposed to be objective in your reporting. And that hasn't been done. And the reason I looked at veterans, almost all veterans, like for you, sir, you are an officer. You have to have a degree. When you start to move up the rank structure, you have to have a master's degree. I'm looking for individuals to have expertise in their chosen field, not just the foreign affairs, the military, but also domestically. Someone who can write on economic issues. And there's a lot of military personnel who are very educated, both from an enlisted standpoint and from the officer corps.
But they get, to me, the important part is they get the importance of reporting.
Correct.
Relative to the democracy. I'll give you another little piece of this, Master Gunn, to get your thoughts on it. I was just talking about this a few minutes ago, but I interviewed a senator for the program that I do. I still do up in North Dakota. And so it talks local politics, blah, 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 blah. So I interview a guy who's a former senator, Byron Dorgan, from the state of New York, North Dakota, and talk to him about compromise, about the media, blah, 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 blah. His comment, Mike, look, the lubricant that makes democracy work is compromise. However, you can't compromise anymore because you will get slaughtered. It's like no man's land in World War I. There is nobody out there. There's no friends out there. And so the only thing that you will assure yourself should you compromise is a contested primary the next time that you choose to run. And I thought about that, and I thought, wow. He said, you will be called a sellout, and you'll have somebody who will accuse you of betraying the party because you compromised on this issue. He said that's what the nation has come to. Now, he linked it to the fairness doctrine in the 80s when the FCC kind of abandoned the fairness doctrine, which allowed the rise of conservative talk radio and the lack of any so Hannity and Combs didn't need Combs anymore, right? You could only have Hannity. Where with the fairness doctrine, it required you to have, if you were using the public airwaves, it required you to have Holmes there. And so,
correct.
And so what he says is now you have a polarized media that is fundamentally driven by profit because they're all for-profit businesses. So clicks matter. What content works? The most overheated content that you can put. And you have CNN and Fox as the two major news outlets in the nation, and there is no more McNeil-Lear NewsHour. We don't; those guys aren't around anymore. That product isn't there. And so, I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Well, no, you're correct. It's very polarizing. You're either conservative or liberal. And if you buck the party system, you're either a rhino or a dino, meaning Republican in name only or Democratic in name only. But the concept that you articulated before about the veteran, I go back to World War II where the greatest generation came back, but after 4 years, half of all students were veterans. And then the next 40 years, every phase of American society had veterans in there. Now, I kind of liken the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan to the Vietnam veterans. Now, we didn't get treated like they did, but we got, thank you for your service and all that stuff. But the difference is when veterans today go back into the workforce, there's no one you can connect to. And we've got a lot of challenges, whether internationally and nationally, and veterans have been all over the world. They've done things. And they have expertise in their chosen field, where a lot of journalists, they go to journalism school, they go start at one little small town, and they just move up until they get to the national level.
Right.
And a lot of journalists today, especially on the national level, are only really coming from one segment of the country, and that's the Ivy League colleges, where veterans come from. They meet all phases of society. Like, we served in the Marines. We met everybody from every ethnic, socioeconomic group. And this is what's missing, and I think veterans can really tell the truth and let people know this is what's going on in their country. This whole election was you get people on Facebook commenting back and forth, and like, that's wrong, that's wrong. What were you thinking?
Well, and here's somebody just emailed this question. Hey, Mac, I've learned a lot about the media, and I've really learned to enjoy this conversation about media outlets and whatnot. I'm now interested. Question, your question often, where does your guest go to find the truth, to find accurate reporting? So, Master Guns, you personally, where do you go try to find the truth?
For me, there's a lot of different sources I go to. I try to read a lot of books on different subjects. I don't get, you go to the library and the bookstore, I try not to get anything that's current events because that's all politically driven.
Right.
I like to get it through the different policy centers. I mean, I know Real Clear Politics has a lot of things from both sides, but most of my news doesn't come from the news organizations. It's just come from studying at the different policy centers, listening to individuals, and basically listening just to the general public as I get most of my news or how things affect. And it's difficult today to get objective news that you can find out what's going on a given topic. That's very difficult.
Okay, so having said that, where do you go? How do you get your information? Do you just read a ton of, do you read?
I do a lot of, I read a lot from the books. I hit some like Council on Foreign Relations. I hit Strategic International Studies. I go to the Brookings Institute, which is a progressive liberal think tank, to get that perspective. I hit some of the conservative stuff. Then a lot of it is just listening to some of the, you know, the pundits going back and forth and then dissecting what's fact, what's fiction, and I have to verify what they say. I got to go back and verify it, like going to some of the government websites just to get their the information. And some of the things I write for a place called In Homeland Security News. So when I write my articles, I always put a hyperlink to where I got my information. And then you can see where I got my information. But it is tough. You really have to go through a lot of different sources and just vet to see if that's accurate or not.
Okay. My guest is John Ubaldi. He's a retired Marine Master Gunner Sergeant. And the website is called www.ubaldireports.com. I like Ubaldi Reports, not the Ubaldi Reports. And here's why I like Ubaldi Reports. Ubaldi Reports, to me, implies you're reporting. The Ubaldi Reports, once you make it plural, I get it that it could be the same thing, there's just more of them. But I like Ubaldi Reports for this reason. You're reporting. This is what we do here. We report. And so if you take it in the military sense, somebody reports a post, they're telling you what's going on. There is no editorializing. There is no opinion. They're reporting. When you take it in the journalistic sense, it should be the strict adherence to the rules of journalism relative to reporting, which is you report the facts. And it's the lifeblood of in my opinion, of a democracy, which is the truth. Increasingly, it's we can't even agree on a set of facts to begin a debate on in this country. What the hell? How did we get there?
Because we just got to such a polarizing aspect. Now, if anybody's a student of history, if you remember Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who was a famous Russian dissident who wrote Gulag Archipelago,
right.
He finally gets released from the Soviet Union, he gets exiled. He comes to the United States, and I think it was 1978. And I would encourage everybody to look it up, but he gives a speech in Washington, and he just comes unglued on the reporters. And he did it in an educational manner, but he goes, "You are the watchdog against government. Who watches you or who holds you accountable when you don't report something or you misreport something or you're not covering something? Who holds you accountable? Who is your watchdog?" And when the media flips and becomes partisan and is making the news instead of reporting the news, that's a problem with our democracy. And Alexander de Tocqueville said that back in the 1830s, American news is all about what is profit-driven.
Right.
And we've seen yellow journalism over the centuries in this country. And that's the problem. Is they violated their own ethics code. And there was a president of Society of Professional Journalism. She spoke out against President Trump in the way, and I agreed with her comments about his bombastic statement. But she also failed to report or criticize the media for colluding or sending their stories to the Clinton campaign, or when Donna Brazile had questions forwarded to the Clinton campaign in preparation for a town hall. So now you are no longer objective in that news reporting. And that totally disavows your credibility when you do that. And it's danger for our democracy. Well, now you can't trust the one watchdog group against government. So now who watches government? And it's a very dangerous precedent we're in.
Email question says this. "Mac, you pondered this question a lot. Do you have any answers? Are you closer to an answer?" I'm closer.
That's a good question.
I'm closer to formulating, I think, the important question, and that is this: is the truth too important to be left? Is the truth in a democracy too important to be left to for-profit businesses? And what alternative do you have to that? A government-run website? A government-impacted a media outlet? I don't believe anybody thinks that's a good idea.
No.
So what is the answer? And the answer that I'm formulating would be for-profit journalism. And maybe you might not make as much news as the shrill voices, but a for-profit journalism entity that has at its root extremely high standards of reporting and articulate commentary, articulate discourse, and articulate dissent.
Correct.
That would be, if I were to design it, I would be design a very articulate, profitable product that shows respect, restraint, and fidelity to the truth. And I think... go ahead.
No, the one point that I'll make, and I totally agree with that premise that you're going with, but the reason why I wanted to set it up with veterans is going by a comment that John Kennedy made in his inaugural address. Don't ask what the country can do for you, but what you can do for it. Now, we remember the veterans who went into World War II. They served their country, and they came back, and they wanted to do something for America, and they reshaped America for the decades to come, and really reshaped the world. After 9/11, we both deployed to Iraq, Afghanistan. We knew many Marines and soldiers and sailors and airmen who did just that. And they came back, they gave something of themselves to America. And that's the problem. We don't have people giving to America. We have people who exploit America for their own desire. And this is where the military changed. We gave to our country. We continually did. And now we want to give a different approach. Then how we want to shape the truth, so let people know how we can fix some of these key problems. There's no right or wrong answer from either side. We want to get the information out to the people. That's the group that needs to stand up and fix this problem.
You know what? I don't disagree with you. Relative to the email, I think I'm closer to formulating the right question as a complete question. The answer to the first part of my question is it is too important to leave to for-profit businesses. So in my opinion, you have to find a business that is a hybrid business that while they may be for-profit, they have tremendous fidelity to an ethical code that embraces two concepts. One is the concept of reporting. And then two is a balanced opinion section that is what the McNeil Lear NewsHour used to be. You got news, and then you had these thoughtful, articulate men and women on both sides of issues that sat down at a table and in an articulate, thoughtful way, whether in assent or dissent of the issue, expressed themselves and footnoted their argument. And I think the nation loves that kind of discourse. It's just not what is offered. And you know what? And maybe it doesn't love that kind of discourse. So maybe you wouldn't get the numbers that the screamers get on CNN and Fox. But if we don't have a place to go, I think the democracy is headed. Can it be headed for a worse place than where we're at now? I guess it could be.
The screamers get all the attention, but there's still a good segment of the population.
Hey, Master Guns, I don't know if our connection went bad or something, but it sounds like you're in a beer can right now. I've got that echo. Can we take a quick break and let me call you back?
Sure, we'll do.
No, it just got better. I don't know what happened, but it just got better. But let me take a quick break, and you hold on, and we'll continue this conversation, because to me, it is when you look at the issues of our democracy, I see two major ones. One is how we raise money for political campaigns, which is what brought you Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, because they could both do it.
Correct.
And the other one is how we as a nation get information and how we define news and how we take it in. And so I love this conversation. My guest this morning is retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi. You can find his work at the Ubaldi Reports, UBALDIREPORTS, reports.com. It's on the internet right now. And you can read about the economy. You can read about defense, foreign policy, healthcare, U.S. politics. You can take polls. You can do all of that right there. So we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio on a Wednesday, hump day, coming up next. This hour brought to you by our friends at BattleMug.com. You can check out all their products at on their website at BattleMug.com. The Battle Mug itself starts out as a 10-pound block of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, ready for you to make your own. Picatinny rails on the side means anything on your rifle, pistol can go on your mug. If you're keeping it in your office, they have emblems, they have flags, they have all kinds of stuff that they can throw on it. You can have the base engraved, your name, your rank, your date of retirement, your date of promotion, your unit, the unit insignia, all that can be engraved. It looks very cool. Mine has the blue diamond, so very happy to have that thing around. And, again, they have not only the Battle Mug, but a whole series of products that you can check out at BattleMug.com. Perfect for any commemorative event, retirement, farewell, promotion, birthday, anniversary. Very cool gift and one of a kind, I might add. Use the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company with a product made entirely in the United States. BattleMug.com. Check it out. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
.37 here on the west coast of the United States, and we continue. Master Guns, John Ubaldi, retired, author, owner, founder of the Ubaldi Report, my guest here this morning, and I've got an email for you, Master Guns.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Mac, curious. I love this concept of Marines in journalism. Marines have their own idea about right and wrong and tend not to compromise a whole lot on it. I think it would be a welcomed addition to the landscape of journalism. There's a lot of good journalists out there that try really hard. I'd love to see a page like your bastardized version of the Drudge Report in addition to their reporting as well. So I'm looking forward to whatever you guys concoct in the future. Want to wish you all the best of luck. Question for Master Guns Ubaldi. What does he see as the most compelling issue before the nation? I just checked out his website. There's a number of different areas that he writes about. I'm curious, what does he see as the single greatest challenge in front of the nation right now? Master Guns?
The single greatest challenge that I see is one word, the economy. America has always been strong when the economy has been booming, and we have got to get that moving. We've got a $20 trillion debt that has to be fixed or has to be reduced, but you've got to get small businesses moving, and you've got to get people back to work. And that's the biggest challenge I see what's going on in America is that, among other things, but that's my biggest, basically my biggest threat is that.
A lot of things go away when the economy gets really good.
They do. I mean, we're at about 4.8, 4.7 unemployment, but we still got a great underemployment. More people are working part-time, and a lot of the issues coming out of Washington are a direct result. We have individuals who've really never run a business, never done anything outside of politics, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with veterans running news organization, because they've done something. They have an expertise in something. They didn't just go to school and write. They've actually had to implement that kind of strategy.
You know what? Let me ask you some basics. Veterans make up what percentage of the population?
Well, going by what General Kelly had said when he spoke about days after he lost his son, we make up less than 1% of the population. And I've done some research on it. It's about less than 1% of the population. And of that 1%, how many have actually deployed to Iraq and or Afghanistan? So it's we're a very minority group in America.
Now, this is from the website 538, which is a math website, right? It takes issues, whether they be political, sports, health and science, economics, or the culture, and they look at the math behind them. And so if you ever see something and you're looking for some kind of math solution, and you ever see, and it's all spelled out, 538.com, if you ever see that, I would encourage you to take a look at it, because
I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, it's because they do math. They're math guys, and so they see numbers and then they kind of dissect it. And this is from 2015, yeah, from May 19th of 2015, so a couple years ago. I recently heard someone throw around the statistic that only about 2% of all living Americans have served in the military. That seems low. That and seems worthy of fact checking. Ron, a Navy vet from Michigan. Dear Ron, as of January 31st, there were close to 1.4 million people serving in the U.S. Armed Forces, according to the latest numbers from the Defense Manpower Data Center, a body of the Department of Defense. That means that 4.4% of the American population is on active duty. That's not your question, though, is it? You're interested in the percentage of people who have ever served, perhaps because, as a veteran yourself, you know that former members of the armed service vastly outnumber current members. The Department of blah, blah, blah. Let's see. If you add the numbers of the Census Bureau, the IRS, and the Social Security Administration, you add their figures on veterans, to the active personnel numbers mentioned above, 7.3% of all living Americans have served in the military at some point in their lives. But since only 2 million veterans and about only 200,000 current personnel are women, that overall percentage varies a lot by gender. 1.4% of all female Americans have ever served in the armed forces, as compared to 13.4% of all males. So according to them, 7.3% is the number that they would use. So interesting stuff. And then I think that there are 10% of small business owners are veterans. Which is a disproportionate number. Does what you see in the last 3 months encourage you relative to business development with the Trump administration, or have they had so many problems that they can't even get there yet because they can't get out of their own way?
It goes two ways. I'm encouraged by the fact of just from the national security staff. I'm encouraged who he chose.
Right.
I mean, not because he was a Marine, which I'm glad, was General Mattis being Secretary of Defense. I wasn't so focused on his military prowess. I was more focused on his strategic prowess. He knows the Middle East region. That's what I wanted, was someone who didn't have to spin themselves up. Rex Tillerson, who's Secretary of State, he had many years at Exxon, and I know some people will take umbrage with that, but he knows international policy. And I think McMasters, I read his book, Dereliction of Duty, which was a phenomenal read.
How depressing was that to read?
It was depressing, but it was also an insight how we shouldn't do things in the future, how we need to get everything in line and not just one direction, and it kind of we could see how it replicated itself to a degree in Iraq and Afghanistan. But I wanted individuals who's actually done something outside of just nothing. It's great to have people have political experience, but I wanted them to have a balance, political, whether military experience, business experience, international experience, economic experience, so they know how everything works. So I'm encouraged by the team he picked. Now, the other infighting, that's to be seen, but that's what I was looking for, was that.
Okay. All right. So you're cautiously optimistic, I would say.
I would agree. That's a good assessment.
All right. Here's an email. The government, regardless of who's in the majority, does not have the moral authority to dictate the content of our news. the, quote, fairness doctrine, unquote, sounds nice, but who gets to decide what is fair? Talk to some old radio guys and ask how it was implemented. You come from a black and white world that requires honor and integrity. I listen to your struggles with the issues with interest. The Master Guns is right on target in terms of the compromised media. Therein lies the truth. And that is from Ohio Man, Mason in Ohio. The former Marines that listen, and that is the truth. I mean, so to me, it's got to be an organization that, although it's profit based, what's most important to it is its integrity, and sure. I would an articulate balance, so that people from both sides will come to enjoy the discourse. And, you know, one of the things I talk about is that I saw, is I saw Bob Dole and Bill Clinton. Clinton was no longer president and Dole had retired from the Senate. They were talking farm policy on, and it was on PBS. And they were at some forum, I want to say in Nebraska, or where Dole was. Iowa? No, Kansas. Dole's from Kansas. So it might have been something that was going on in Kansas. So and they're both smart, articulate, and they're talking about where the nation had to go relative to agricultural policy, how important. And they got a chance to just show off their kind of brilliance, and both guys are really smart guys. And I thought, where were these guys when they were elected? Why couldn't they be like this? Why didn't we get this version of them when they're elected? And what is the impediment to that?
Well, see, the interesting that you bring that up, I go back to, if you go to conservatives, they look to Ronald Reagan. Well, if you go back to 1986, when they did the last tax reform, you had Ronald Reagan was conservative, Tip O'Neill, who I believe was from Massachusetts, who was liberal. They would fight like a banshee from 9 to 5. As soon as 5 o'clock was over, they were best buddy. Hey, Tip, let's come over for dinner. So when they passed the comprehensive tax reform, Reagan gets up there and said, we just cut taxes. Tip O'Neill gets up there and says, we just raised the taxes. Neither one of them was going to rain on the other person's parade because they knew they had to bring back something to their base. They could get along. They can compromise. They got, and as Reagan said, you're not going to get all the loaf. You get half a loaf and you move on. And they can get things done. And they were two polar opposites, but they knew after 5, let's done. Let's go to dinner. Let's go get some drinks. And we don't have that today. Everybody wants that full loaf and nobody's willing to compromise. But going back to what your latest, person who emailed me, you from Ohio, the one thing that needs to change is the American people need to take a greater part in their election. Like this past election, we got maybe, 52% of eligible Americans voting?
Right.
The last time we were over 60% was 1968, and the last time we went over 70 was in the 1870s. That's hardly healthy for a democracy when most of the country doesn't vote. And that's the basic fundamental freedoms we have.
How do you get that number to go up? Most people don't care. They don't identify with the process. They don't like the system. They don't, you know, they're not interested.
Well, the thing that changes is the school system. They don't teach this process. They encompass history and social science all into one. Even in geography. I mean, they don't teach how the system works. I had a former Marine who had some difficulties with her license. And she came to me and she was complaining, I got to get this done. So I said, hold on. I called her state representative. Within 3 hours, she had her license reinstated. And she was like stunned. I goes, I didn't know you could do that. Most people don't know you can engage your elected officials at the local, state, and federal level. With any issue you have, engage your public officials. That's why I try to go to all the town halls I can and see if I can get a question in. I want to engage them. And that's the only way we're going to fix a lot of these issues is Americans need to take, I don't want to use this term again, but take back their country, take part, whether you vote Democrat, Republican, or whatever party you vote, but take back and vote. Because I worked at a political consulting firm a long time ago, and when you run candidates, they target certain groups. The largest voting bloc in America is senior citizens. And you ever wonder why nobody says anything about entitlement spending? Because the senior lobby will be on your back.
And they vote, right? And they vote.
And they vote. Well, here's an example. You ever, the worst drivers in America are that those new drivers. Slightly behind them is seniors. And I dealt this with my dad before my dad passed away. They put all these restrictions on teenagers. Name a politician who would ever put legislation saying, we need to limit the driving of seniors. That person will never be in office again because they vote.
Interesting. Let me read you a couple things.
Okay.
Mac, interesting. I agree with you when you muse about the fact that were O'Neill and Reagan that collegial, or is that some romanticized version of it? I know more guys served them then, but I don't believe Tip O'Neill served. So I'm kind of fact-checking.
I'm not sure he did. I can't remember if he did or not. I want to say yes, because, you know, World War II generation, I think he did at some point.
Let's see. In June 1941, Tip O'Neill married former schoolmate Mildred Ann Miller, with whom he had five children. Rosemary Thomas, later the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts, Susan, Christopher, and Michael. He improved his financial situation in the 1940s when, evicted from his city job by political rivals, he entered into the insurance business, an enterprise he continued for over two decades. He did not serve in the military during World War II, originally receiving an exemption to serve in the legislature and then receiving a physical deferment due to mild diabetes. Uh-oh.
Okay, there you go.
Uh-oh. Okay, so I wonder if the whole, if that is like a romanticized version, but it's certain, without a doubt, you know, sequestration was something that nobody ever really knew anything about. It was this thing that you heard, like, oh, you know, they're in danger of sequestration, or they're going to shut down the government. Well, sequestration, come on, that will never happen. At some point, they'll pass a budget. And now we've got to the point, the scorched earth point, where sequestration, you know, it was a matter of fact that we were going to have a sequestered budget. Are you kidding me? And that's the way the nation runs now. So I'm with you in that, you know, I don't know, again, so what I look at this great country we have, and I look and I think, how does this work? How does this continue to go forward on the track that it's on right now? Look at what our democracy gave us in the last election in terms of choices.
Oh my gosh.
Right, for the highest office in the land. It was horrible. And that's where our system of how we raise money, what gets attention, these are the two people that are the best the nation has to offer to lead it. Are you kidding me? It was horrible.
Yeah, the choices were bad for this one particular. We got a Trump on one side and a Clinton on the other. Now, again, I go back to my days of working at the political consulting firm. If a candidate came up to us and we said, I'm going to run for this particular office, and we said, oh, that's great. Can you self-finance your campaign? And if they said no, we're like, well, thank you very much. Good luck. Because it's very expensive to run these races. Right. I mean, they raised well over $1 billion in television. Like, now you live in California. California is one of the most expensive states to run. I mean, you have, I think in 2 years, you're going to have a governor's race. That's about an $80 million race. And you got to run in five different regions of California. You've got San Diego, Los Angeles, Sacramento, Fresno, and the San Francisco Bay region. And you have to run, and media is expensive. So a lot of good candidates opt out because they don't want to use their own money. And then the other side is, once you run, the opposition will go into every phase of your life, you and your family's life. Who wants to put that exposure in there? Who wants to put their family through that?
Well, let's just say you do, but only the rich now can do it.
Correct. Unless you've been in government your whole life and you have access to all these things, and that's what you get. It's basically the wealthy are running.
No, I mean, look, when you have Jean McMahon, who is the wife of Vince McMahon.
Correct.
Right? She is. She ran and just narrowly lost the race for senator. Jean McMahon, I mean, my question would be, Jean McMahon ever served in her life? Yes, no?
No, I mean, this is what we're reduced to with these candidates, even from the local offices. I knew a friend of mine in Sacramento. He ran for school board. He spent, I think, $13,000 to $16,000 for a school board seat. The person that won spent $80,000.
Wow, that's crazy.
So why would you want to run for public office? It's just the money has got to get out of there. And it's very difficult. That's why a lot of good people just don't run.
All right. All right, Master Guns, first of all, I appreciate you doing this today. I hope you don't mind. We should do something on a regular basis, so let me give you a call.
Okay, we'll do.
And we'd love to have you on and find out what's going on the Ubaldi report and help get you out there, your message out there. So thanks for doing this. Obviously, we're interested in very much the same thing, which is ironic. Because we haven't spoken since we parted company in what, 2012,
2013? 2012, yeah. Marine Corps ball was the last time we started.
All right. Well, first of all, thanks for coming on this morning and doing this. I appreciate what you're doing, and all the best of luck to you.
And I'll try to get that other general for you for one of your shows.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
All right.
There you have it. All right. From the Ubaldi Report, UBALDI.com, and you can check him out. A Master Gunnery Sergeant and a good one. He and I, colleagues at the MEF Headquarters Group back in the day. We'll take a quick break. General Zinni will come. George W. and Paul Ryan brought up entitlement spending, and they were crucified for it. Yes, the Reagan-O'Neill bromance is highly exaggerated. That's what I mean. But reaching compromise was they did. Yeah, and let me tell you, entitlement spending. Where do you stand on that one? Right, you have the liberals that will lose their mind over it. And you have seniors that also would lose their mind. Seniors vote. Okay? They vote. So where do you stand on entitlement reform? Where do you stand on that? If anything, it doesn't get fixed until it becomes a crisis. And that's just the way our country rolls. And I would offer you, how do you fix entitlement? You fix it the way they do base realignment and closure, right? Because nobody can vote for it, right? Because everybody's getting screwed in the deal. So how do they do it? They set up a commission. The commission takes a look. You either accept or reject it in its entirety. In its entirety. That's what you get. And it's accepted. And it goes through. That's the only way you would ever reform entitlements, is that to create some hybrid piece of legislation that holds everybody responsible, so no one person could be blamed. But that won't happen until you get to a point of great duress, because there won't be enough pressure. We'll play the blame game, and it'll continue as our government continues in its dysfunctional way. All right, my thanks to John Ubaldi for coming on. Interesting guy. And I'll tell you what, and I love the concept, you know, leaving the truth. I shouldn't say the truth. Leaving reporting to profit-driven entities is a bad idea. I think a news entity has to place its integrity and the integrity of its reporting. Okay, how do you do that? You have to have somebody who will endow you to do the work. You have to have somebody or some groups that will endow you to create another network. The Credible News Network, KNN. I don't know, I got to give it another name. But credible is what I want. Credible news system, broadcasting system, CBS. Everything's taken. I'm screwed on this deal. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear General Tony Zinni for the next couple hours. And it's an awesome interview. It's an awesome, awesome interview. So whatever you do, don't touch your dial. More of All Marine Radio on a Wednesday coming up next.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.